Welcome back to the Resonant Life Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Layla Doolittle, and today I have the absolute joy of sharing a conversation with someone I deeply admire, Dr. Jill Carnahan. This episode is truly meaningful exploration of what it looks like to heal from the inside out, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually as well. We talk about resilience and how life's greatest challenges can actually become the doorway to our greatest growth. We dive into mold sensitivity, autoimmunity, and mast cell activation, and also faith, intuition, and the power of self-love and self-compassion in the healing process. Dr. Jill is a dually board-certified physician and the founder and medical director of Flatiron Functional Medicine, where she specializes in uncovering root causes of complex chronic illness through cutting-edge diagnostics and personalized care. A pioneer in the field of functional medicine, Dr. Jill brings a rare and deeply personal perspective, having overcome breast cancer at 25, Crohn's disease, and toxic mold illness. Her best-selling 2023 memoir, Unexpected, Finding Resilience Through Functional Medicine, Science, and Faith, blends clinical insights with lived experiences, offering readers practical tools and profound inspiration for healing. Dr. Jill also wrote, produced, and stars in the award-winning documentary, Dr. Patient, now streaming on Amazon Prime, which shares her compelling story of transformation. Recognized worldwide for her expertise in environmental medicine, gut health, mycotoxins, and immune dysregulation, Dr. Jill is a sought-after speaker, educator, and advocate. She is celebrated for her ability to translate complex science with authenticity, clarity, and compassion, empowering patients and practitioners alike to reclaim resilience and hope in the face of illness. In today's episode, Dr. Jill shares so openly about her journey and her wisdom as both patient and physician. And if you've ever wondered how to move through uncertainty with grace or how to reconnect with your body after illness or trauma, I know this conversation will meet you right where you are. Let's dive in together, and you will enjoy this conversation with Dr. Jill as much as I have. I am so excited to have the time to carry on a conversation with you, Dr. Jill. You're amazing with everything you've brought to the world.
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely delighted to be here with you.
Well, so you have really created just a powerhouse of a ripple effect in the functional medicine world, the functional medicine community, as well as in integrative healthcare. And your book, Unexpected, has been transformational for me and for so many of our own patients. And I would love to open up the space for you to share about your inspiration behind this and some of the takeaways that we can all benefit from your book.
Oh, thank you so much. That always means a lot because, you know, you're in the writing world and you're like, is anyone going to read this? And I'll tell you, it's funny because it went back probably from 2016 or 17. I had kind of a retreat time of weeks of prayer and meditation. And I remember way back then, which is now like 9 years ago, feeling very strongly like I need to write a book. And I know a lot of people feel that. Maybe some of your listeners feel that. But there was this little pause of like, oh my gosh, who am I? Like the imposter syndrome, right? Who am I to write a book? What, you know, what do I have to say? And I remember almost getting a download so clearly of like, all you have to do is tell your story, because story matters. And each of us and everybody out there listening, we all have a story. Mine is no different than anyone else. But when we tell that story, especially with the hindsight of seeing it and seeing some of the things we could have done different or better or that we did great. And then also just for me, it was really assessing and looking at not just the functional medicine piece and how I got through many different illnesses, but also like during the process, what kinds of trauma pieces played into that? What kinds of attitudes led me to, and really all the things that have to do with resilience. That's kind of the theme, is like, how do we actually embody resilience? And I think what happens with that is we all suffer, we all go through difficulties. And when we can look at our difficulties, even in the midst of them as they come, whether it's an illness or a financial crisis or a divorce or a loss of a loved one, whatever's coming our way, if we can kind of, instead of bracing against the impact, it's almost like if you're in a car accident and you brace against the impact, you get hurt much more than if you're just like, okay, and God forbid, hopefully in a car accident, and you still, it's hard not to brace, right? But if we could really like relax and let ourselves go with the flow, or you're surfing and you take a wave, and it's, there's this piece of becoming part of the difficulties and actually not maybe welcoming them, because who of us wants to suffer, but really just being okay with change, being okay with difficulties, being okay with, like, I know resilience in my mind is really how do we handle our assurance, our ability to deal with change. And most of us don't love change, but if we can kind of embrace that. So my story, my book became really about my facing breast cancer at 25 and then Crohn's at 26 in the midst of my medical training. And then really like learning how to become more resilient, not only to overcome those, but to take those life lessons and take them into the next phase and the next phase and the next phase. And I feel like as I've lived now 40 plus many years, I have this confidence, this unshakable confidence that I know life's going to bring difficulties and I know I'm not done with them, but I know that I can handle anything that comes my way. Like there's not anything, I mean, granted, I don't want to suffer. But there's not anything that scares me in the sense of that I wouldn't somehow have the resources. And I think that's what I want to give the gift to those readers or anyone in my life is how do you also become that resilient that you know you can handle things? You know that you have the resources somewhere deep inside of yourself.
Yes, how beautiful. I love hearing you talk about this and really just transforming traumas and reframing them in this way is so empowering. It allows for people to just go through life in this beautiful space of like a flow. And then they're able to just take on challenges bravely, courageously, lean in, and know that they're able to just bring up so much strength, so much inner strength that it's going to help them to feel absolutely confident with anything that that may come their way. Wow. So you mentioned something about resilience and your resilience that you felt. Where do you think that this like consciousness level behind resilience comes from? So it's oftentimes developed through difficult times, difficult traumas that people are able to lean into and, allow for the flow. But what about for you? What did you feel like your consciousness really leaned into the resilience in? And what was that capacity like?
Such a great question because I do think there is something. I always, one of my favorite authors, Viktor Frankl, who has been through so much, Man's Search for Meaning. And it's just such a beautiful piece of someone who has probably had the ultimate suffering that maybe many of us can't even imagine. Like it's so much more horrific than anything I've gone through. And yet, in the midst of it, he talks about mindset we can choose and some of the things we always have choice. What happens with stress and difficulties is often it triggers the four big acronym for things that trigger cortisol, which is nuts, novelty, something new we've never seen before. U is unpredictability, something where we don't have control. T is threat to ego, or it could be threat to health, like in the pandemic, we were all afraid of, getting sick or whatever. And then the last one is sense of control. So all these things kind of play into these are the common things that when something, we get a curveball in life, financial, health-wise, in whatever way it is. It's unexpected, it's novel, it's new, it's unpredictable, and it's a threat to our health or our sense of who we think we are. But if we can start to really relinquish our right to have control, one of my biggest things is Viktor Frankl's, is there's a word called grit. A lot of books talk about grit or this. There's many ways to frame it. I like that word. There's many other words, but it's also resilience. What it is, though, at the core is this unshakable foundation that we know. Number one, who we are. We know that we will somehow have the resources to overcome. And I think I did. I mean, I definitely was born with this kind of stubborn German Swiss core that I had to develop. I had to develop a lot because I still have fears. I still have fears, right? I'm human. But I developed that ability to become pliable in the face of change and also confident that I'm going to have what I need. And I may not have it at this moment. That's what's weird. You might go into it and like, oh, I don't have the faith. I don't have the resources. I don't have the money. But if you walk forward, assuming that those things will come and still take that step, if you don't know where they're coming from, there's power to that because all of a sudden the people, the resources, the things start to come. Now, the other thing that comes to mind when you say that is the word faith. I talk a lot about faith. I happen to have a very strong belief in God and a higher power, and not afraid to say that. But I also like speak to and love people from all areas, right? From the atheist to the Jewish, the Buddhist, the Christian, the non-Christian, wherever you're at. And to me, faith is much more simple. And what it is It's how do we deal with the inevitable uncertainty that life brings us? Like, do we have that core belief
Right.
that something good will come from this, that we have the resources we need, kind of the things I'm talking about? And then you can apply that as faith, even if you don't even believe in God, that you somehow have those resources. And again, I'm not afraid to say I do have a very strong faith,
Yes,
but
definitely.
that for me has been really the thread that if
Yes.
there was one thread through my life, it's like I commune with a higher power.
Yes,
I
yes.
feel that presence. I talk to God. I hear from God. And I also live in a way that I hope brings honor to that, which is really
Yes.
trying my best to love myself, love other people, and love and do things with love as an intention versus fear.
Wow, I love that. And absolutely, I feel that. I feel that in the words that you put into your book. I feel that in your energy and how you practice and how you're showing up in your functional medicine guidance, as well as inspiration to so many other practitioners around you. We can all feel it. And so you're definitely aligned. And that's what's amazing is it's like this thread of faith that is so beautiful hearing you explain it this way. That's where there is like a spark that's already there. And oftentimes that is what's cultivated through experiences, traumas or stressors or whatever. It's just like we continue to mold ourselves to be more resilient, like, almost just getting built within the flame or the pressure, like a diamond gets built. But it is, there's that inner spark still that oftentimes it's so beautiful. And like being able to lean back into that, like leaning back into a confidence in that faith in God or a higher power of any sort that anyone's, like you said, anyone's believing in that light, that love, that peace, that joy, and that security and safety, that there's nothing like that. Just being able to like lean back into that and being cherished in that and experiencing and knowing that someone has our back, like some greater being has got our back, no matter what we're going through or what we could experience. It's just so nice to be able to feel that too. And that's so beautiful that you bring that into your all of your messages and the way that you're communicating and speaking. I know it is such an inspiration for so many, especially walking a complex, difficult journey like
Means so much. Like if all of us want to be seen, right? And
yes.
it's 15 years ago when I started my practice in Boulder, and I remember really understanding. I have to start telling my story, and I was such an introvert. I was so afraid of like being out in public, which now people
Yeah.
think is funny, but at the time it was really hard to share my story and to share. And I was like, oh, I want my privacy. But what I realized is, when we walk in alignment and share ourselves, flaws and all. Things that everything that we maybe think is shameful or we don't like about ourselves or we struggle with, or and it's funny because as a medical practitioner that does functional medicine, we think we should have the answers, so we think that we should be able to heal ourselves. And granted, over years and years and years, I have been able to heal from things, but there was many times, and I still have bad days today where I feel like, gosh, shouldn't I be over this by now? So we have that doubt in our own abilities when we come up against our own humanity. So I think it's so important that the more I can be super real about my own struggles, the more that people have permission to also be real, because we're all in it. We all have struggles, and we all have our insecurities. And the more we can try to be in the world in that way, the more we I mean, or, getting straight A's or whatever kind of thing that I put on myself. And that benchmark was so high that I never felt like I really achieved. Like, I felt like I was always falling short because I set this standard that was way too high for any human to, be at. So as you start to let go and realize that you're lovable, not just for what you do and accomplish, but for who you are, just for being born, you get to be loved, and to start to integrate that, like that, talk about healing. That is such a
Wow.
powerful healing. Really realize, oh my goodness, I am worthy of love just for being me, even if I don't accomplish
Yes.
a single thing today.
Exactly. Just being, again, not having to do any more actions or prove yourself or anything. Just being. And I think there's another takeaway in that too about loving ourselves, because we can so often be our greatest critic. And that happens oftentimes where it's like if we can just appreciate ourselves, love ourselves, and literally ourselves will be listening to that those signals of love, that information of love. And that's oftentimes what clears autoimmunities and cancers and things like that, where it's like our own body turned on itself, but
Yeah.
that never actually should be happening or needs to happen. It's like it's our body's capable of so much innate healing capacity. Miracles are absolutely possible, capable, and our divine rights, like built into us intrinsically, built in to heal. And so we just have to get out of our own way with that healing.
Oh, so true. I just read a quote today that's so relevant to our conversation. It was, how personally you take something is a direct reflection of how much grace you give to other people. And it's interesting because even before we started a little later than you had scheduled, and you were so gracious because I was running late from an appointment. And so, two things. First of all, earlier today, I had another podcast scheduled. That person called me, said, "I'm so sick today. Can we reschedule?" I'm like, "No problem." And then it opened up so that I was able to go look at this property, this meeting I had to have, which is right before your podcast. And then I'm running late for you. But it was just like this circle of grace because when I got that call from my friend who was scheduled with me, I thought, "Oh, no problem." That opens up, and then I have this. And then you were so gracious with me running a few minutes late, and like, no, like, you extended such loving grace. Not one moment did I feel like I put you out, even though I probably did. Like,
Oh,
there was like,
no.
isn't that the circle? And I think that's an important principle too, because the more that we cannot, if we don't show loving kindness, grace, and allow for our own fallibilities and our own shadows and our own stuff that we just don't like, when we do that and we start to accept ourselves, flaws and all, then we can extend that same loving grace to the world. And we are limited until we do by how we show. So if we're really harsh and critical to ourselves, and we have this high standard that no human can ever achieve, and we're always falling short, and we're always berating ourselves, and the record in our head is like, "Oh, that was so stupid. Why did you do that? Oh, I can't believe you act like that. Why did you do, whatever things that we do, and we all have them." And if we're not recognizing that, then we are subconsciously extending that same lack of grace to those that we come in contact with. So I realized a long time ago, and I still work on this, is like, we have to start with ourselves and show that grace here, because that's the limit to which we can extend it to the world. And if there's anything the world needs right now, it's grace. It's grace.
It is absolutely. Wow, that's so beautiful. And yes, it is. It's like the quantum field around us shifts according to what frequencies we're putting out. And so the biofield frequencies, people pick up on whatever is in our field. Like our nervous system and our heart are very connected in either a coherence or a discoherence. And oftentimes we get into habits just like that, that limiting self-talk that can happen where we're not extending grace to ourselves, and therefore it gives others permission that they are going to also be the same way, either negative, or we can do the opposite, putting out this positivity constantly on an intracellular, microcellular, quantum level within our biofields and within that coherence of that loving space in our heart. And people pick up on that. They really do.
It is. It's crazy, but it's so powerful. In fact, I think I always wonder, like, I'm not that smart. I'm not that girl. Like, how do we have a successful clinic? And I'm like, you know what? I know how to love people, and I'm still working. Like, but like at the core, I get so excited because loving people is not that difficult, and that is where healing starts, right? And I think the secret sauce in my clinic and success is just like, how do I mean, years and years ago, it's like, how do I glorify God, the higher being for me, and how do I love people? And at the core, if I had a mission statement, the secret mission would be, how do I just love people? Because when you love the in fact, I heard another phrase, and I love this definition of love. It's creating a space for the optimal transformation for another human. And when you're really in that loving space, and it could be even like an intimate relationship, if you really want their best and their optimal transformation, it may or may not be that they're in your life, right? Like, you love them so much that if there's another person or a partner that's better for them, you love them so much that you want their very, very, very best. And I'm continually working on that, but I want to be in that place where every single person I come in contact with, I love them so much that their best is what I want always, right? Versus my selfish desires.
Yes, I love that so much. And if all, half of the healers out there, half of the medical practitioners, whether they're in the allopathic world, integrative world, or functional world, just came first to that one mindset shift of just it's about love. How can we get back to this foundation? Then think of the transformation, the ripple effects that would just occur. And of course, it's beyond just healers, it's also listeners just in their community and their families and their friend circles and just how they're showing up to the grocery store and how they're putting out that frequency of love, it truly is transformational. It's healing. And it doesn't even have to be communicated. It's like that just thinking those thoughts puts that out into the field.
Yeah, it's amazing. Even on a bad day, it was like, okay, how do I love, whatever. It does. It changes our
Yes.
mindset and how we show up and how we react, I think.
I love it. Okay, so now we have been talking so many things about all this deep meaning, and I am curious about some of the science behind your own journey. And if you want to share some inspiration of just what are some of the things that you've really found inspirational to use, and like out of everything, simplifying functional wellness into just a few like gems that we could share. What are some of those things that you'd love to share today?
So I look back at my own illness, which was 25 years old, breast cancer, aggressive breast cancer, then Crohn's disease, and then I eventually got mold-related illness, and along the way, mast cell activation syndrome, and all kinds of other little autoimmune things. But there's a couple of themes. First of all, with functional medicine, I feel like a lot of it boils down to toxic load on one hand and infectious burden on the other. And these two things are kind of invisible. A lot of people don't know that they maybe have toxic exposure in the air that they breathe, or the water they drink, or the food that they consume, or in any number of things, either buildings they live in. And then infectious burden, we have these dormant things like, say, we got Epstein-Barr at 18, we had mono, and then it stays dormant and we're fine. Or chickenpox, we got at 5 years old, or we got vaccinated or whatever. So those things lie dormant. But what can happen is over the years, as those toxic load goes up, and our bucket, we often talk of the capacity of a bucket, and when it starts to fill up and the water spills over the top, at some point, maybe 40s, 50s, 60s, we manifest with disease because our capacity to detox is no longer working. We're bailing out a leaking boat. We can't quite keep up. So when that happens, often things like autoimmunity, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases. These are all the big ones. There's more, but those are some of the big ones that are coming up. And as that toxic load increases, our capacity to stay keeping up with that, unloading the bucket, is overwhelmed, and then we become sick. And the infections come along with, say, we had Epstein-Barr as, 19-year-old in college, and it's fine, we're not sick, but we have a massive stressful event, we're not getting sleep, we lose a loved one, we have a financial crisis, or we get sick. Our toxic load and our stress levels go up, immune system goes down, and then old things like Epstein-Barr or even chickenpox come up, we get shingles, or we get sick with chronic fatigue. So this play is often at work under the hood of the car for most of my complex chronic patients. So I'm always assessing where's their toxic load, where's their infectious burden, and these two things combine to create immune dysfunction and inflammation, where either you have an immune deficiency where those old infections that should be dormant and not bothering us start to pop up, even Lyme disease, tick-borne infections. Or you have so this overactive immune system with autoimmunity, where you have something like Hashimoto's thyroiditis or multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis or any of these number of autoimmune diseases. So, and you often see them simultaneously in the same person, where they really have a weakened T cell, weakened B cell, weakened immune system, and at the same time they're dealing with autoimmunity. So it can be this really crazy thing where body starts attacking itself, but it's also not fighting off infections. And I feel like that framework is really where most of my functional practice is detailing the infections, the toxins, and trying to then decrease the water level in the bucket so that person has margin back. Because if they have margin, then you can start to.
Threshold. Yeah, I love it. Gosh, that is such a beautiful and concise and simplified way to explain that. And that is packed with so much information. Thank you. I love how you're referencing this toxic burden bucket. And one of the things that I like to talk about with all of our listeners and our patients as well is about the toxic burden bucket and why some people have a different size bucket or a different shape bucket or a different capacity than others. It's like at that threshold, how much they can handle. And what is that to you?
Yeah, so we all are born with different genetic polymorphisms, fancy word for meaning like the expression of our genes. And we used to think that you were born with the genetic code and that was your life code and you never could change it. Now we know for almost all gene expression, it can be modified. We call this epigenetics by diet, lifestyle, exercise, nutrition, supplements. So there's a ton of stuff we can do. So just because there are a few deterministic genetic things like Huntington's, maybe, or Very few, but most of the genetic expression is modifiable, which is exciting because it means if you're born with some risk, you might still have a higher risk than average, but you can change it. So buckets are like that. We are all born with the capacity, and there's so many different pathways. Some of it is liver enzymes like cytochromes, a glucuronidation, or phase two of the liver. There's a bunch of different pathways in there that determine our toxicity or our detox capacity. Our ability to produce glutathione is another one of those. So we can look at all these genetic variations and determine, even from birth, if someone has a really difficult time with getting rid of toxins, they're more likely to have a small bucket in our analogy. And so that their capacity, maybe when they're 12 years old, they get really sick with Crohn's or celiac disease or some sort of autoimmune. Whereas I always joke about the 95-year-old who has a gin and tonic in one hand and a cigar in the other, and he's like, he's fine. And, he dies at 105 of a heart attack suddenly in his sleep. And that person probably has a very large capacity over his lifetime. He really, maybe he was a coal miner and had the smoke. So there can be people who really have a significant toxic exposure, and yet they handle it well. And they just happen to have those really good genetics for the elimination. Now, one other frame I love these kind of simple things, is when we're thinking about detox, because if your toxic load is high, your bucket's full. One of the first things I do in the clinic is like, how do we kind of help your body eliminate that toxic load or bring that water level down? Because if it's spilling over the top, you often manifest with, like I said, cancer, autoimmunity, neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's, ALS, et cetera. So say you're in that situation. Well, what you want to do is have mobilization of toxins from your tissues into the bloodstream so that your liver and your kidneys can start to filter that and then eliminate through the urine and the stool and the sweat and even breathing. And so mobilizing is one thing, and we do that through infrared sauna and things like glutathione, NAC, alpha-lipoic acid, even binders. But the other part of that is mobilization and excretion. Excretion is actually getting it out. It's the road out of your body. Most of the time, this comes from, like I said, sweat or urine or stool or some way of eliminating. And even in our breath, sometimes we can eliminate toxins that way. So often we're enhancing, but when I see other practitioners, even myself, when we get patients into trouble where we're trying to do a detox protocol and they get way more sick, sometimes we call this a Herxheimer reaction. Part of that usually is we're mobilizing too quickly for excretion. So I always am thinking about this as I'm checking in with a patient, seeing where they're at. And sometimes you have to go extremely slow. The highly sensitive patients, you have to go very slow, very low dose. And I'm never a fan of pushing, because if you mobilize quicker than you can excrete, especially if you're dealing with heavy metals or some of these things that might be going out of the bone, like say lead or mercury stored in the bone, you get it, mobilized out of the bone into the bloodstream. If you don't have a place for that to exit, it can reaccumulate in brain or in other tissues that might even be more harmful. So I think that balancing mobilization and excretion is really, really a core principle to detoxifying when you have a bucket that's spilling over the top.
I love it. I love the way you are simplifying all of these complex concepts in functional medicine and root cause. Okay, so now there's another concept too about the receptor sites on cells and how they can become atrophied, misshapen, just they're no longer listening to information coming in. And information can be in many different types of signals. It can be our own body producing neurotransmitters or hormones or different various peptides and ligands and things, or it could be also the information of supplements that we're trying to send signals through the different herbs. It can be in just the way that our body is no longer able to listen to various signals, even, how much of sauna therapy can someone handle, or how much of, they start adding in so many different protocols, lymphatic activation things. So that gets really complex whenever we start having cellular sensitivity to environmental toxins, and now sensitivity to even just healthy and good information. So highlight some of that, because you've touched on this a bit about the sensitivities and the Herxheimer reactions and things.
Sure. So first thing is, there's about 10 or 15% of the population. I write about it in my book, and I learned from Elaine Aron, and there's been several others who have written. She was one of the first who wrote about the highly sensitive person. And what I learned is, I grew up in a, German, Swiss, stoic, hardworking farm family, amazing family. Like, it developed my work ethic, and I had brothers, so I learned to be tough. Wonderful qualities, right? But what I didn't realize or recognize is I was actually the super, super sensitive, kind of creative, girl in this family that I kind of took on the qualities of that stoic, hardworking, don't complain. And again, it helped me. It was beautiful. I wouldn't have got through medical school had I not known how to kind of dissociate from pain and suffering and just push through. So all good. But then as I learned and got to know myself better, I realized, oh, I'm actually super sensitive. And this is relevant to my patients because I would say, even though it's a 10 or 15% of the population, my patient population might be like 30 to 50% of the highly sensitive because they're the canaries that are starting to notice a toxic load in the world. They're the ones that have more infections, they have more illness because they're more sensitive to whether it's family dynamics or relationships, whether it's environmental mold in their environment, which I do a lot of work with that, whether it's chemicals, whatever it is, whether it's a chemical trigger, an environmental trigger, or whether it's an emotional trigger, they're the ones like me that are going to notice it in the environment first. They're kind of like we had a bell-shaped curve. They're on this end over here where they're starting to notice it. And it's relevant because, first of all, one of my friends once said, and I actually loved this so much, I put it in the book, Jill, you can be a badass and a delicate flower, right? Because I think what I realized, I thought was like, oh my gosh, if I
I
become more
love
soft
that.
and delicate, like my true nature, I'm going to lose all this like hardworking, motivated, badass, whatever you want to call it. And it's funny, like even if I look back, like I climbed this huge Flatiron peak rock climbing for the, like it was a big adventure. And I was like, I felt like I didn't have to prove myself, but there was a piece of me that was like, oh, I gotta be strong, right? And then I went and bought a motorcycle. And so some of these things you can see in my life, you're like, yeah, Jill, you were just trying to prove that you were strong. But then what has happened, and again, I try to teach my patients this is that sensitivity that you all your life have been shamed about. Like, oh, you're so sensitive. Oh my gosh, you're sick again. Oh, is this real? Are you sure? I mean, all those kinds of things, the gaslighting that comes along with this, the all of it, and especially with mold-related illness, which is a whole nother tangent we could go on. I knew years and years ago I could sense environment. I didn't feel well in certain environments. And yet for many years I ignored it. I thought, Jill, you're crazy. You're making it up in your head. And now, 10 years later, I'm finally so confident. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I went to a friend's house and I had this immediate, I call it narcoleptic mold. I felt like I need to lay down. And then I got home and had a headache. And I was like, that was a mold hit. Like I know, I'm certain of it. And I told them and we ended up, it's just a conversation. It's all good. I think they're going to check something that I think, but it's interesting because years ago I would have been like, oh, you're making this up. This is no big deal. You're imagining it. Or if I told someone, they would say, oh, are you sure? That's crazy, right? And I have learned to be so confident because I am a mold dog. I know. And I am pretty much 100% right in the end, as far as
Absolutely.
right. But I had to learn that. And I love teaching patients that because this population that we're talking about, the highly sensitive population, they have been gaslit for many parts of their lives if they're like me that grew up in with not everybody being sensitive, because these people who aren't sensitive don't understand the level at which you can sense change or the level at which you can sense toxicity. Or even we all have this experience, right? We walk into a room, maybe a party, or maybe it's a friend's house, and you walk in and you're just like, do they just have an argument? What is like, you know, there's this energy in the room.
Fill in the
Something
blank.
is not right. Or you walk in on your children, right? And there's like, oh my gosh, they may not even say it, but it's like something, maybe there's a bully at school. If you're a sensitive person, that energy you pick up everywhere you go. And we start to, again, because it can be so overwhelming, because we're like antennas. We pick this up everywhere. And whether it's a toxic exposure in an old theater, or whether it's a Wi-Fi system that's really, really, really powerful and it scrambles our brain, or whether we walk in on someone's argument, like we know it. And what happened over the years in our society, it's like Susan Cain has this book, Quiet, The Hidden Power of an Introvert in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And that's kind of relevant too, because even though introversion is not the same as highly sensitive, it's this introverts and highly sensitive people both have this intuitive sense and they pick up things that others don't. And that's why what I love to frame back to my original point is this is a superpower. This is
Yes, it is.
a detriment. This is a superpower. You know, you have suffered with mold-related illness, or you've suffered with being sick more than others. But guess what? The hidden thing in here is as you get well and as you start to own your superpower, you can walk into a group and see what needs to change. You can walk into a friend's house and see her sadness and love her in that state when no one else saw it. You can walk into a building and walk right back out because you know there's mold in that. And so as you embrace it as a superpower and start to really trust yourself, it becomes one of the most beautiful gifts in the world.
Wow, I love that. That is so beautiful. And absolutely, it is a superpower. And it's not developed lightly. Like, it's most of the time we go through so many hurdles to get to that place. And so it's like that is, in essence, a reward that now you have learned to trust yourself. And now you're listening to those inner whispers that our body sends us as signals, our nervous system is sending the signals. And so often we have to get into that place that we can listen to ourselves and feel heard, feel seen, feel understood. And our own body is trying to tell us something. Our own nervous system is giving us those signals of interpretation. That's beautiful. I had another thought as you were talking about all of this. There are so many different angles that I am just so excited to pick your brain and to learn more about how you're practicing. I had a mold journey myself. That was what got me into functional medicine when I was 12 years old, and I knew I would become a practitioner that could help people like me that were struggling and trying to find their way. So that's where toxic black mold has a such an interesting way of really impacting and affecting our body. We have so many different types of co-infections and other biotoxins that can also impact us. But mold itself, there are so many complexities to it. And I think mold has become such a super toxin because of so many different VOCs and all the fire retardants and all these different chemicals that are, sprayed throughout all of our construction materials and our houses, our homes, the buildings that we're in. And also just the way that mold itself has been evolving, its own like epigenetic expression itself is evolving to keep up with the way that it has to get smarter. And so it's like becoming this evil, this darkness that we have to bring light to that and understand more about it. So, what is your perspective on this?
Yeah, I love that you frame it that way because not many people are able to talk with that clarity like you just did. Because really, and evil may be a really strong word, but honestly, I feel like it's really evil. It's almost got this like personality of its own because it's so toxic. And what it does is it does the worst of the worst. First of all, it takes advantage, it depletes. Glutathione is your thing that helps you mobilize and excrete toxins. Like if you don't have any glutathione, you're going to be stuck where your tissues have toxicity. So the first thing it does is it depletes the very thing that would help you get rid of it. So it literally takes down your levels. It uses up and depletes your glutathione levels so that you have to supplement or make more or enhance it with other practices or things. Take it IV. There's all kinds of ways to do this. But if you are in a moldy exposure, you're going to be depleted of the very thing, the very substance you need to help you get well from it. So that's pretty evil. Number two, there's this thing that happens. And when I researched for my book, I was actually shocked because what I experienced was, for example, I had known mold and understood mold for many, many years. And yet I still, even to this day, there's times where I go into a moldy place and I either get really sad all of a sudden, like the world's ending. And I'm not a depressed person, but I'd be like, life is terrible. I don't know if I can get up tomorrow. It feels so, or I might feel anxious, but definitely more depression for me. And again, that's not my nature. But in the midst of that, insight is the definition of insight is really understanding in real time what's happening. And it's something we talk about in psychological illnesses and dissipation of insight, right? Do they really understand what's happening? And so we all seek to have more insight. And I always hope that I have it. But mold somehow actually sabotages in real time. So often, say I walked into a building and I get a mold exposure, or maybe I smell it or sense it and get out, or I have those symptoms. It often takes me a few hours or hindsight looking back to be like, oh, when I went in there at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, I felt gross. I woke up with a headache. Like I'll look back and understand. Oh, that was a mold exposure. It wasn't just me falling apart emotionally, right? And I find that I don't have as much emotional resilience. It's almost like the frontal cortex, which is kind of our guide to maybe have a little bit more control of our emotions and things. It's also what's inhibited when we drink alcohol. So sometimes we say things we wouldn't normally say if we drank alcohol. Similarly, with mold, we get disinhibition. So we kind of have more emotionality and stuff. And yet, in real time, we may not realize or have the insight. And back to the research for the book, what I realize is there is literally evidence, multiple journals about mold. Breathing mycotoxins through the nose goes right into the hypothalamic pituitary axis through the cribriform plate and can directly trigger our limbic system. So the active fight or flight thing is not just, oh, I'm afraid of mold. I know I got sick before. That's one part. But there is literally a physiological trigger to amygdala activation and fight or flight, which means what I've realized is as I'm helping patients heal from mold, including myself, one of the things that's critical for everybody who's had mold exposure is to do limbic retraining.
Yes.
You have to address that part of your body because otherwise, even if you're like, I'm fine, I know I'll be okay, I have resilience, you still can get triggered into having that fear response on a physiological level. So, like I said, even the most person who's been to therapy and done all the work and done limbic retraining, if they have a significant mold exposure, it's important to do some work around that because otherwise, every time you smell the mold, get in a moldy spot, your body, even subconsciously, is getting triggered that there's a danger, that it's a threat to your life, and then acting accordingly, which is not good for cortisol or damage to tissues or catabolic states.
Exactly. And that autonomic nervous system then shifts towards that sympathetic overdrive where the rest, digest, healing, regeneration, and just detoxification in general can't occur as well. The parasympathetic function is where that is. So that's where the natural limbic system retraining and healing and getting back to that place of that functional neurology resilience of the nervous system and rewiring how the nervous system responds. That is crucial component. I love that you referenced that. That's where it gets into that functional neurology aspect of my
Yeah.
practice. I think it's so important. And my greatest passion in it is about the mindfulness, the awareness, and like the consciousness. So you mentioning that about insights, that's huge. That insight and intuition of just really truly feeling and knowing, like in your soul, you know certain things and you're able to go through your life and make decisions with that confidence of being fully in the driver's seat of your own life. That it almost like puts you in the back seat of the moving car where you're just like along for the ride. And whenever it takes away that much control and that seat of that insight, then you're not able to feel like you're expressing yourself or like you're even taking in information, receiving information from your environment adequately or properly, or it's skewed or distorted, oftentimes with mold cases.
That's so eloquent the way you just described that. It really is, because I think that's really a core. Because if we think about it, we are created to be signaling like our skin, our sight, our taste, our smell, our everything about us is a body that is taking in signals in the environment. And
Yes.
also internally, right? So if we have a little chest pain or shortness of breath or a little bit of heartburn. All of those are signals where our body's like, hey, Jill, do you realize this may not be the best avenue for you? Or maybe this, and we can do it with decisions too, right? Like we have body, I often say if it feels like it's drawing you towards, like you're really leaning in, or if you're like, oh, no, all of that is actually part of this too. And it's
It
really like if it, I've said before too, if it feels like it's expanding you, like this idea, this dream, this decision, if you feel the sense of expansion when you think about it, or this person, right? Is this the right person for me in this relationship, friendship, love relationship? And if it feels expansive, it's probably the right thing. Your body's kind of saying, but if every time you are with them, you get a little bit of a stomach ache, or you get a headache when you leave, or you're just like feeling really contracted, like you can't really be your full self, all of those are signs. And I think what happens, and what my experience was in medical school, is it's really sad. Our medical training actually trains us to be somewhat dissociated because we're not supposed to cry in front of a patient. We're not supposed to show emotion. We're supposed to literally, we're trained to be up for 12, 16, 24, 36 hours without peeing, without eating, without sleeping.
Goodness.
Like we're training our body's needs to be like, shut up, body, I need to work, right? Like literally, medical training is geared towards creating this sense of false resilience because we're denying our own bodily functions and needs. And it really trains out the empathy, which is the most important part of human connection and the most important part of something you just alluded to, which is safety. And it all creates and say, if we don't feel safe in our body because of mold exposure, because of illness, because of trauma, because of whatever else, or because we're with a person that doesn't create a safe environment, and we can create it for ourselves, so I don't want to always blame it on the other person. We can't heal. Our immune system cannot heal unless we feel safe. So as you spoke to that, so many ideas came up because really, really at the core, another job of us as practitioners is creating a safe space for that patient to feel held and seen and to know that we've got them. We may not be perfect, but like that sense of safety is so crucial for healing.
It is, and that instills that trust and that hope, and then the faith in their body and its capacity to heal, because we take away the things that are restricting them from it, and then they realize that the trust is there within themselves, within the practitioner to the patient relationship. They understand you've got their back with so much love and so much grace for how their system is responding and going through the health journey, the wellness journey, and through transitions and transformations. Just knowing that you can help them interpret those signals, and that's so beautiful and so important for each patient. Okay, so now that brings up another concept that I wanted to segue back to, and it's about cancer and autoimmunity. So these are two diagnoses that really respond to signals that are distorted. And it's oftentimes, like I was mentioning before earlier in the podcast, it's oftentimes we can be so hard on ourselves, so critical of ourselves, and like that negative self-talk. Or it could be from another family member or someone around us from an external source that we are getting these sensations or feelings of inadequacy or lack of self-confidence, lack of feeling worthy, feeling like we're enough. And that's where the immune system starts to turn on itself. It's like, okay, well, there's something wrong with these cells, and these cells are dysfunctioning. So therefore, should we start attacking? And that can oftentimes be one of those distortions that starts creating autoimmunity, is that like self-resentment or lack of self-love or worthiness. And then cancer, it's like almost another form of, there is like toxicity that our own system is just not seeing or feeling or being up to the par that it needs to be for watching whenever the DNA is getting replicated, and it doesn't catch that. So it's not seeing that that accidentally got turned into a cancer cell rather than another replica of that cell. And then cancer can ensue and just continue to fester because of so many of these like negative distortion types of experiences. So, what is your take on this and perspective of this?
Yeah, I love what you said. It's so relevant because, yes, we can go with chemotherapy or radiation or herbal treatments or all kinds of things with cancer. And same with autoimmune, we can fix the gut and we get an immune system and that interface. And there's so much with functional medicine that we can do. But we are missing the boat if we don't at least think about this metaphorical and psychological piece. And a couple of things really come to mind. First of all, I have breast cancer. Breasts are this nurturing organ that you give life to a young baby, right, through the breast milk. And so there's a metaphor there of someone who is loving, nurturing, giving to people, and not really taking it in themselves or having trouble receiving. And I hadn't really learned that. It's so much more, think about this. Vulnerability, if you receive from someone and some you allow someone to give you something, you may or may not owe them. It's not about that, but there's a sense of like it's way more vulnerable to receive or to need something from someone than it is to be the one out there solving problems, giving resources, da da da. So, being a doctor, like
That's the
doing
easy
what
part.
we do, right? As far as giving and loving people is actually quite egotistical. And I hope not, like I'm not in that place, but truly, if we don't learn to receive. And so the breast cancer to me was an awareness around, I had basically met my ex-husband at 19. I got married at 21. He had three children. So I was raising three stepchildren in medical school with a spouse that worked 6 days a week. And he was a good husband. We have a good relationship now. We're divorced, but there was nothing awful or abusive. But even so, I was putting out so much in that above and beyond, again, raising the kids and going to med school. In fact, I look back, I'm like, sweetheart, how did you do it? I don't know. I don't know how you did it, except that you were very dissociated back then, right? So that overabundantly giving, and again, there's a mechanism we all have. There's always some reason we do what we do, right? And the reason behind that, because it's so less vulnerable to give and to serve, because again, there's a sense of like, if there is an obligation or transactional, which I don't like in relationships, but the truth is, if you're the giver, there's a sense that you're the one providing, you're the one taking care of, you're the one. There's an ego to that. So you have to really learn with cancer in general, but especially with me with breast cancer, how do you receive? How do you end some of that? And how do you be more vulnerable? Because it takes a vulnerable mindset to receive. So that's cancer, and there's so many other things around that. Melanoma, I had possible melanoma back maybe 5 years ago, and did all the psychological stuff around that. And that was actually more around like self-loathing, self-hatred, not loving yourself, your own skin, and that goes into autoimmunity because metaphorically, Gabor Mate would talk about autoimmune is really attack of self, right? It's our own immune system attacking self. So there's a piece of that metaphorically that you either don't like part of yourself, you're denying part of yourself, or you hate part of yourself, or you hate, parts of your physical body. So the healing there really comes in trying to integrate and love all parts of yourself, even the parts that you maybe considered shameful or the parts. Like for me, for example, I grew up in a household where women were fairly compliant and didn't really get angry, and sadness was, here just a little bit, and more joyful, happy, compliant, which made for a great, happy human being, right? But the truth is, we all have emotions, and I don't think I really understood how to express anger in a helpful way until I was in my late 30s and 40s. So, if you think about that suppression of anger, and instead of directing, if I didn't know how to express it to someone else in a healthy way, it turned on me. So, any anger that I had, that's the only safe way was to put it on myself. Oh, come on, work harder, try harder. You're not doing enough. You're not enough. You'll never be enough. And that's really hurting ourselves because we don't know how to express it in a healthy way to someone else. And it's so harmful. And to me, autoimmune healing from that was part of resetting that programming around the self hatred, the self-loathing, the self, all the things we do to ourselves. And as we talked about before, like loving ourselves is part of the healing. But what I realized is the intuition is so closely tied because if we don't trust ourselves to know, we can't really love ourselves. Like there's this piece of like trusting our own intuition to know what's right in situations, to say no, to set boundaries, and then being able to love ourselves. Because again, if I feel like it's so closely tied, and if we don't truly trust ourselves, we can't really love ourselves.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love it. Eloquently stated, for sure. And I am so gracious or grateful that you have brought this perspective to your own health journey. And then you're bringing this to so many. You are such an inspiration. And, that is another concept too, health journeys. They're almost like lessons and gifts, and the opportunity to step up and step in and to appreciate that opportunity. And so it's reframing why someone's going through health concerns and giving them that motivation and that opportunity to really be inspired, that it's going to be this beautiful, inspirational story that will bless so many around them as they transform it into this beautiful light perspective. And also know and embrace the fact that it's not easy and no one enjoys suffering, but they can transform it. In this concept too, mast cell activation, you understand this concept very well from walking the journey of it. And it is an autoimmunity that is an essential part about how our own body is trying to send signals. So it's like this concept of our body will whisper to us signals, and if it's not feeling heard, seen, understood, or interpreted properly, then it starts to speak, it starts to yell, and then big diagnoses are happening and havoc erupts. So what is that concept about calming down the immune system's response, calming down, and how can someone that is in mast cell activation shift out of it, shift away from it, and start to clear it and start to clear those massive reactions and sensitivities?
Yeah, so mast cell activation. So mast cells are primordial cells that are part of our immune system that are fairly undifferentiated, and they're not super specific like other parts of the immune system, but they're kind of those bouncers outside the bar where they kind of are out there sampling, testing, and they're very connected to like our gut interface with the bloodstream. There's dendritic cells and HLA, and the mast cells are often triggered by some signal. Maybe it's gluten in the diet that we're sensitive to, or corn, or maybe it's some glyphosate on the food residue or whatever else, or it could be heat, or it could be cold, or it could be chemical, or it could be infection, or it could be other toxins. So there's a huge number of things that can trigger. And so So in our world, as we talked about, as our buckets increase with toxic load and infection, so the toxic load infectious burden is at play here as well, because those are two of the main things that trigger mast cells. So all of us have mast cells. Some of us have more reactive mast cells than others. They're kind of like the sentinels, like I said. And so when that happens, when we get triggered by heat or cold or chemicals or infections or mold is probably the number one thing that triggers mast cells, all of a sudden our mast cells throw out all of these hundreds of chemicals, including prostaglandins and inflammatory molecules like histamine, and it can create things like rashes or brain fog or fatigue or dysautonomia, where your blood pressure or your heart rate isn't stable. It can cause heartburn or leaky gut. It can cause blood-brain barrier interruptions. It can cause food sensitivities, and on and on and on and on and on, even pain syndromes. So mast cells can be responsible for a huge number. In fact, the consensus two statement talks about having systemic illness that involves more than one symptom as a diagnostic criteria, and then a response to treatment. Now, what you alluded to is at the core of treatment is some sort of limbic retraining, because our body is thinking it's not safe. And there may be real unsafety, like an infection, like a mold in our environment. So it's a very real thing, but we won't heal from mast cell activation until we also deal with a safety issue, like we talked about before. So that's number one, the limbic training. I like Gupta program, DNRS, Primal Trust, and now there's more and more coming out. There's many more that are great. Those are some of my favorites. Also, like any sort of vagal nerve stimulation device, there's GammaCore, there's Truvaga, there's oh gosh, you name another two or three. There's a bunch of them out there, but all these kinds of things can be helpful. I don't really love the devices if you don't also do the work, like the breath work and sleeping and connecting with friends and all the other things around that, and just creating safe messages to your body. That's critical. And I love vagal nerve stimulators, but I don't think that just the stimulator without the other work is going to be a great result. So I always like people to do both. And these can be helpful. Usually they're devices that hit, like one of them hits this nerve right here, and you just put it on there for 2 minutes at a time, and you can do that as often as you want. But that's the so mast cells, you need to start with that limbic system. Then you want to go through the process. And unfortunately, most of my patients who have mast cell activation in the midst of it, they need multiple layers to control that. So you're starting with H1 blockers, H2 blockers, mast cell stabilizers, leukotriene inhibitors, sometimes even immune modulators or steroids. I mean, you can go pretty heavy hitting with these when people are really, really sick. And then there's some wonderful natural substances that I love to use, like quercetin, nettles, PEA, Chinese skullcap, and there's any number of substances that really work to calm that nervous system down and calm the mast cell activation. And then the other thing I didn't mention, the say you're in a moldy house, you must get out of the mold, because otherwise you're going to be chronically triggered. So if there's a toxic exposure or a mold in your home or environment, or there's some sort of thing that's always triggering you, you really need to address that as well while you're getting well from mast cell activation.
Oh, I love it. I'm so glad that you explained it with all of the very tangible steps that people can start taking, because it's so, I think it's one of those very forlorn and almost just elusive types of diagnoses that many people experience. And we have a lot of mast cell activation clients that come in because it's just complex mold illness clearing journeys. They oftentimes get this activation, and it's so good to know that there are opportunities for their body to get back to that state of peace and that grace, that love, that light, and not be in that type of suffering and stress zone. I'm so glad that you've also framed about the limbic system retraining being at the absolute core of every one of these different health journeys. I love how it brings back the intrinsic nature of any wellness journey, so that it's not all of these things that are external to us, like all these devices, the vagus nerve stimulators, red light therapy, or the supplements or anything. It's like this is in our core, going back to like the depths of us and who we are and our own soul's expression in this realm, in this earth, and how we're expressing our days every day. That limbic system is a huge component of how it's like tuning the antenna. So our antenna is the signal that's bringing in information from our external environment and how we're feeling, how we're experiencing. And then it tunes the antenna. The limbic system then interprets these signals in whatever perspective or light it chooses to with that filter of that prefrontal cortex. So it's important that we are attuning it so that we get a more clear frequency in that intunement and that intuition. And our own expression of that then is going to be much more clear.
Well said. It's so fun to talk to you because we're just like on the same wavelength. And I get it vice versa.
Nice.
You just take it and run. Like it's so, it is such a joy because you
Oh,
get it. You speak
I
the same language.
Yes, we do. I'm so thankful that we've had this opportunity for this conversation. And Dr. Jill, this will definitely not be the last time that I invite you onto the Resonant Life podcast because this was truly a pleasure and an honor for me. And I feel like we are friends and like-minded practitioners that can share insights and perspectives. And I know our listeners are all thrilled to get to hear this conversation. So share with anyone who's listening how they can find their way to you and just get in touch and tune. And listen to more of your wonderful wisdom that you share.
Thank you so much. And it has been such a joy. Your energy is contagious and so beautiful. So it makes a
Thank
difference. It's
you.
been such a joy. If you guys want to know more, my main website is just my name, jillcarnahan.com. And you can get links. We have a documentary that's now streaming on Amazon Prime called Doctor Patient. You can go to Doctor Patient Movie or go to that main website. Blog is there, podcast is there,
Yes.
book is there. So all those
Great.
resources, if you want any of those, it's just jillcarnahan.com. And then on Instagram, I put a lot of fun stuff, and that's just Dr. Jill Carnahan.
I love it. And definitely, I cannot rave enough about her book, Unexpected. Make sure that you all read that. It is an inspiration and a beautiful journey that I feel like enlightens so many people and how they can just think about their own life and how they're walking their journey, their adventure of life. So definitely get that. Thank you so much, Dr. Jill. I'm so grateful for this opportunity and this time with you.
You're welcome.
We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Resonant Life Podcast.